Welcome to Sacrilegious Discourse.
For this is what the Sovereign Lord says.
Why do you need prophets to tell people who you are and what you want?
If you can justify everything that the God of the Bible has done, then you can justify any of your behavior.
A lot of this mentality is trickling into what is now mainstream right-wing Christianity.
I am capable of empathy greater than this God of the Bible.
This is a Bible that they tell kids. This is the good Lord. This is the good book. He is fantasizing about murder, mass murder.
Head over to sacrilegiousdiscourse.com right now to find out how to leave us a review or support us on Patreon.
Husband!
Wife!
Do you know what we're doing today?
Well, you know, best laid plans and all, right? We did 8, 9, and 10, the Matthew.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're doing a Q&A.
We're doing Q&A Saturday, but only on Chapter 8.
Right.
Because
we've undershot how many questions we had, I guess.
Which, look, here's the thing. I don't mind doing these Q&As in two-parters for the New Testament because I'm trying to answer a lot of questions, and it's taking something that already had questions and then adding to it and telling lies about the lies. So I just don't mind it. Okay.
Sure. No, I mean, you know, if we're going to do this, we might as well be thorough.
Yeah.
You know, let's be as thorough as we can.
So this episode, we're just doing the Q&A over Chapter 8, and then the next episode will be part two of the Q&A, which will be chapters 9 and 10. And I think I'll be able to fit 9 and 10 into one episode because a lot of chapter 9 is just a continuation. It's different stories, but it's a continuation on the themes that I'll be covering in chapter 8. So okay. I won't have to mention that twice.
Got it.
That makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah. And then maybe sometime this century we'll finish the New Testament.
Well, then
I don't know. It's a possibility.
Monday or Tuesday, we'll start chapter 11, I guess. We'll see.
No, I know. I just, with us doing Q&As all the time, which is great. I enjoy them. Like, it does help. It's just...
You dread them going in. You're like, really? But every time we do them, you're like, that was pretty good. I learned some stuff. That was good material.
Yeah, definitely.
So it's fine. It's fine. This is fine.
It's fine. Are you ready to do this?
I sure as fuck am.
All right, let's do it.
Okie dokie. All right, we are hopping into Matthew chapter 8, 9, and 10 Q&A that's only over chapter 8.
Right, so just 8.
Just 8.
Yeah, only 8.
Or 8, 9, and 10 part 1, which is just 8.
Just 8.
However you want to say it.
Right.
Oh, little Maddie. So a lot of this chapter is...
Did you hear 7, 8, 9?
Why?
I don't remember that part.
wait.
There's more. There's more to it.
Yeah.
Six
Why was scared six of seven. Scared of seven? Because 7, 8, 9.
That's right. Yeah.
You're so stupid.
Sorry.
You got it wrong. All right, listen.
I'm listening.
Okay, so a lot of chapter 8, and actually chapter 9 too, is just theological propaganda in the ancient sense.
No way, not that.
Totally.
Not propaganda.
No, it's totally. There are stories arranged to make a claim about who Jesus is.
I mean, we knew that going through it. We were literally reading the Bible going, this is propaganda, this is bullshit, this is, they're just making claims.
And then... Yeah.
Like it was obvious just reading the fucking book.
Yeah. Well, what's really cool is that when we get to, this is Matthew. When we get to Mark, they both start with M, so I have to think real hard about which one is which.
Right.
But this is Matthew. But when we get to Mark, which apparently came before Matthew and that Matthew borrows from.
Okay.
So when we get to Mark, he tells a lot of the same stories apparently, but takes a longer time to do it. And Matthew just like speed runs it.
Got it.
And he's like, no, let me put this in a better order for you. Like, he's not about the accuracy of what happened. I mean, that's doing some heavy stretching there.
Right. Yeah.
He's just trying to like put it out and like he's the propaganda man. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A first century Jewish audience would notice that Jesus interacts with a series of people who are in different ways outsiders. So I don't know if we caught this the first time going through chapter 8, but just in case we didn't, it's a story about a leper who is ritually unclean, a Roman centurion who is an enemy occupier, a woman, that's disgusting, Peter's mother-in-law, demons who are social outcasts. I mean, obviously, because
they're demons.
They're demons.
Which came out of nowhere.
Yeah.
But okay.
And Gentiles in pig-raising territory. So
yeah,
these are all outsiders that Jesus is helping and touching and interacting with.
I have to say this before I lose it, and mm-hmm. I should have said it earlier when we were talking about it, because now it's lost some of its punch. Mm-hmm. But do you know when the Bible is most accurate?
When
it's thrown at close range.
When it's thrown at what?
When it's thrown at close range.
What?
When you throw it at close range.
I don't understand.
If you throw the Bible at a target, it's most accurate when you throw it from close range.
Fuck off. That was look, I'm too autistic for that joke. I'm like trying to get.
I'm like, what are you not getting? It's that's. You know.
I'm trying to get the deeper meaning of the question, there was.
I'm on dad joke mode tonight.
Oh my god, I could tell.
Yeah, sorry.
Stop. You need to fucking stop. So this chapter and the next one, which again, remember I said in the intro that chapters 8 and 9 are very much on theme with each other.
Yeah.
Okay. Although the stories differ, they're the same theme.
Right.
So these two chapters repeatedly ask, who gets access to God's kingdom? And Matthew's answer to that question is kind of surprising in that it's not necessarily the people you would expect.
Right.
So the chapter starts out with great multitudes following Jesus, and this is when he heals a leper. Okay, the leper makes his request, and then Jesus touches the leper, and the leper's cleansed.
Awesome.
And Jesus commands the healed man to give testimony of his healing to the priests only.
Right.
And we were like, why? Why?
Well, I thought he said, tell no one.
Yeah.
Something like that. Yeah.
But he said, but only the priest. Oh, tell the priest.
All right.
Okay. Yeah. Here's verses 3 and 4. Jesus reached out his hand and touched the man. I'm willing, he said. Jesus said, be clean. Immediately, dude was cleaned of his leprosy.
Right.
Then Jesus said to him, see that you don't tell anyone, but go show yourself to the priest and offer the gift Moses commanded as a testimony to them. So we were like, hold on, what's leprosy again now in the New Testament? And why not tell anyone? And why tell the priest? And what's the gift that Moses commanded?
And also it's written in the Bible.
What?
This thing that he's not supposed to tell anybody.
Yeah.
They told it to everybody.
Right.
Just, you know.
So leprosy in the Bible was not necessarily modern leprosy. Obviously, we covered this.
Right.
Which today is actually called Hansen's disease. I forgot about that.
Okay.
Leprosy back in the Bible covered a broad category of visible skin disorders and ritual impurity conditions. So like eczema, psoriasis, fungal infections, various rashes.
Okay.
Any kind of skin
basically,
disorder.
Basically, your skin was fucked up.
You had leprosy.
You had leprosy.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And if you acted a fool, you were demon possessed. Boom. Okay. Done.
Or couldn't talk.
Yeah. Yeah. The issue was often ritual impurity, not contagious disease. So Matthew specifically says that Jesus touched him. That's a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Because for a Jewish audience, that's super shocking because impurity was generally thought to spread from the bad, dirty person to the clean person.
Oh, okay.
So
okay.
They had like a... I don't know. We covered this in the Old Testament a little bit, how they had this badness will spread to goodness thing.
Yeah.
And make it grody.
Yeah, I do. I do kind of remember that, actually.
And so it was like a really big deal. That's why we don't touch the dead. That's why we don't touch impure things. That's why we clean ourselves all the time and, you know, go through all of these rituals. Right.
Yeah.
So when Jesus touches the dirty, whatever.
Yeah.
In all of these stories, he touches them.
Right.
And that's a big fucking deal. That's backwards.
Sure.
Because rather than him becoming infected with badness, the bad is becoming infected with goodness.
Oh.
Yeah, it's a backwards, okay. All right. Backwards flow of energy.
Because Son of God energy.
Yes.
Whatever.
Yeah, so this whole thing reverses the expected flow.
Got it.
Okay?
Yeah.
All of these stories, really. Okay. Instead of uncleanliness contaminating Jesus, Jesus's holiness contaminates, a.k.a. purifies, the unclean person.
Sure.
It's a clever theological statement hidden inside just a plain little story.
Right.
Which, to us, is not all that clever, although we missed it, I will say.
Right.
But to them, this would have been revolutionary.
Got it.
Okay? Like, they would have got the big deal.
Well, their whole teaching was to banish the people with leprosy and that were unclean, and that was the whole theory.
But it wasn't just get this grodiness away from me. It was get the grodiness away from me because it might infect me.
Right, right.
Like, A lot of times there was a logical reason behind it.
You know, to them.
Yeah. But that last part of the sentence, though, wasn't always stated because it was just understood.
Right.
And that's the part that we didn't really think of. Like, not only is he not sending them away, he's actually touching them.
Right.
And risking them infecting him, whereas instead it was
and we're looking
other
at this from a modern medicine perspective, more like, whatever.
What's the big fucking
fuck
deal?
Cares?
Yeah. Yeah, it's fine. You can touch people, whatever.
Right.
So all of this was done for a testimony to the priesthood. Okay. That's why he was like, don't tell anybody. And I'll get to the don't tell anybody in a minute.
Okay. Yeah.
But specifically, why was he like, go ahead and tell the priest, though?
Yeah.
Because it was a testimony specifically to the priesthood to prove that this leper, who was doubtless well known in the land as being a leper, because they were at the time shunned.
Right.
So he would have been well known. He'd been thoroughly cleansed. So in this private way, sending him to the priest, it would give full proof to the priesthood that Jesus was the true Messiah, because only the priests were supposed to be able to do this, but Jesus had done it.
Okay.
The Jewish rabbis would know that curing the lepers was a characteristic described in the Old Testament as the Messiah.
Okay. So this is proving
more prophet backfilling.
Jesus is Jesus, basically.
Yes. Yes. And I did not get that. So, like, I was like, why don't tell anybody, but then tell the priest, like, what the fuck?
Right.
So that makes it make a little more sense of what Matthew is trying to say here.
Right.
So that gets to the question, but then why does Jesus keep saying, don't tell anyone?
Sure.
Like,
I thought he kind of covered that one with the, basically, you don't want to prop yourself up with the good deeds that you're doing.
That's part of it, but that's not the whole story.
Okay.
This is one of the most famous weird features of the Gospels, all of them.
Okay. All right.
And scholars often call it the Messianic secret.
Okay.
Which I was like, oh, okay. So we had a good question there. Some famously argued that the secrecy theme was later on added to explain an awkward problem. If Jesus was really the Messiah, why didn't more people recognize him during his lifetime?
Great question.
Right?
Yeah. One that I had in the middle of the episode.
Yes, exactly.
So what I'm hearing is that the secrecy thing is just bullshit to explain why no one knew about him.
Right. It's like he's walking around healing people willy-nilly left and right.
Right.
And some people know him on site and join his Tucci gang.
According to the story.
According to the story.
Right.
Right? But at the same time, Jesus is like, shh, don't tell anybody.
Right.
So it's like,
because apparently nobody actually knew.
Right. Exactly. So other possible explanations are crowd control and political danger. If word spread too fast, crowds might become unmanageable because everybody wants to be healed. Right. They hear it. I mean, we've seen some of that where everybody's like chasing after them.
Yeah.
Like, heal me. What about me? Can I be healed, too?
Again, according to the story.
According to the story. Right. Roman authorities might see him as a rebel king too soon.
Sure.
If the word got out too soon. So he was trying to keep this somewhat on the DL. And we will see why that's problematic later on. I'm going to get to that by the end of this chapter.
Okay.
And toward that end, with Roman authorities seeing him as a rebel king, local elites could move against him sooner as well.
Sure.
So, like, anybody in the position of power from the lowest to the highest king position would have been threatened by this.
Right, right.
And we'll see that he actually does challenge them later, which we missed.
Okay. All right.
Like, he basically out and says it, and we did not understand that that's what he was saying. Because, you know, we're not Jewish and we don't read Bible things.
Right, right.
So let's not forget, though, that the word Messiah has political implications here. Okay. It's not just like, yay, a savior's going to come. He's not a savior. You're lying. It's also like super political, not just magical.
Okay.
Rome was crucifying people at this time for sedition. Had Jesus at this early period fully manifested himself as the Messiah, the people in all likelihood would have gone ahead and proclaimed him king. And this would have excited the hatred of the Jewish rulers and the jealousy of the Roman government, and his further preachings and miracles would have been impeded. Mm. So keep
that
in mind.
Can't have that.
Can't have that, right. No. Also, toward what you were saying, Jesus wanted the message, not the spectacle. So the Gospels often portray him as frustrated when people chase miracles but miss the ethical and spiritual teaching. So they're like, heal me. And he's like, right, but it's not about the healing. It's about, I'm trying to save you. Like, right. It's about God. I'm bringing God's word and God's message.
But I already feel like that message is kind of...
It's already moved.
Yeah, it's already muddled. Yep. Because, like, the people that they've been showing come to him because he's been healing people.
But the first thing that he says to them is, you are forgiven. And do you believe in me?
Sure.
Shit like that.
Right, right.
So he is very much trying to get them to understand the spiritual message, not just the, and now you can walk too.
But again, we're taking the word of somebody who wrote this after Jesus was dead.
Right.
Right?
No, totally.
That these things happen. These things are...
Oh, yeah. These guys definitely wrote this as propaganda.
Right, right. That's what I was getting at. It's still very much stuffing the story of Jesus in here the way they want to stuff it in here.
Absolutely. So. Absolutely. I'm just trying to explain, like, what this stuff would have meant
to
that audience had it been written this way at that time.
Right.
Okay. Another thing is that it's a literary and theological device. Many scholars think that the gospel writers intentionally emphasize secrecy because it created dramatic irony, because readers at the time know who Jesus is, but the characters in the story kind of don't.
Okay.
So, you know, as people are like reading these scrolls or whatever, the readers are like, they don't know it's Jesus, but we do. So they're like excited and like, I don't know, whatever.
I got it.
So Jesus ordered him to show himself to the priest to conform with the purification offerings in Jewish law, him being the leper guy.
Right.
He ordered him to show himself to the priest to conform with the purification offerings in Jewish law, as stated in Leviticus chapter 14.
Sure.
Sacrifices were absolutely still happening then with regard to the gifts.
That was a question we had, yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm.
The second temple was still operating in Jesus' lifetime, and animal sacrifice remained central to Judaism until the Romans destroyed the temple in 70 CE.
Interesting.
Typical offerings could include birds, lambs, oil, and grain, depending on wealth and circumstance.
Sure.
So, yeah, that was happening.
Yeah,
so
which...
Jesus was like, go talk to the priest and do what you're supposed to do.
But that's part of what... Like, my question was that, because nowadays people will be like, well, we don't have to sacrifice things because Jesus died for our sins,
Jesus is the sacrifice.
Sure, Jesus is the sacrifice. Mm-hmm. But they were sacrificing while he was alive, and a lot of the things that he's saying, like the absolving, like Jesus is absolving them of sin as a live person.
Right.
Not before, he doesn't have to die to do it, apparently. So where does why does the sacrificing end at his death, as opposed, like, I guess that's the sacrifice?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's the ultimate sacrifice.
All right.
Yeah.
I guess I can allow that.
There's
to
the overlap time period during which there is still animal sacrifice happening while Jesus is spreading the word. But then once Jesus dies, he's no longer spreading the word. but the word has been given.
And the sacrifice happened.
The sacrifice happened, okay. So no more sacrifice is necessary.
That makes a little sense. I mean, in so far as, right?
I mean, like, if you were doing world building in a story that you're writing,
right,
this would be okay. I would allow it. There's like, okay, those laws hold. You know what I mean? Right. Like, you have to have, everything has to make sense, and you have to have rules that hold. That holds. Yeah. I will allow it.
Yeah.
Your story is good so far. Your world building is okay.
Sure.
Okay?
Sure.
So Jesus heals a centurion servant. The story is loaded with social symbolism.
Okay.
Okay?
All right.
Jesus gets approached by this Roman centurion, right?
Yeah.
And the centurion, as a Roman military officer, was a Gentile, a non-Jew.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
Which is a big fucking deal.
Which I thought Jesus said, don't go to them. Don't help them. Don't talk. Whatever. He said, say something about the Gentiles, I thought. Or no, it was the Pharisees and the, never mind.
Okay. Yeah. The Pharisees were like, stay away from them.
That's right.
But that's why it's a big deal that this Gentile is coming to Jesus, and he's a dude that's representing the occupying empire. So this is a form of literary irony to indicate that the outsider gets it better than many of the insiders.
Okay.
Because he's part of the occupying force.
Right, right.
And he's yet a believer.
Sure.
And those who are like Jewish surrounding Jesus, they don't see him as the savior.
Right.
Right. So the centurion's understanding of Jesus's spiritual authority is what happens next.
Got it.
So when the soldier talks about soldiers obeying him, we had a question about like, what? Who fucking cares? Like, you're a good boss and your soldiers obey you?
Right.
What? I don't get it. But what he's basically saying, he was making an analogy. He's saying, you command diseases the way I command troops. No rituals, no physical touch, and no proximity are required. Just straight up command power. You say it, the word gets done. I get you.
Samesies.
Yeah. So the centurion states he doesn't want Jesus in his house. And we were like, oh, rude. But we thought, well, maybe it would have got both of them in trouble.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's kind of it. He doesn't feel worthy on the one hand. And
okay.
He says that. He's like, I'm not worthy of you making that trip and coming into my home. It's not necessary.
Okay.
But more likely than what he says, it's probably due to Jewish purity concerns. Many Jews avoided entering Gentile homes, so the centurion was probably trying not to put Jesus in an awkward situation. Because Jesus did offer, like, do you want me to come over to cure your whoever? Your servant.
Slave, whatever.
Yeah. And dude was like, no, that's not necessary. I know you can do it from afar.
Yeah.
Because you have command power the same way I do. I believe in it.
Yeah. I find it quite amazing that he's able to heal somebody from afar that he's never met.
Yeah.
I'm like,
that's magic.
How did that happen?
That is some straight up magic. I mean,
it didn't happen, just to be clear. But why? That it just feels very stretching the boundaries of what could have happened, you know?
It's so fucking contrived. Because it doesn't happen a lot elsewhere.
Right.
You know? So it's kind of annoying.
Yeah, I mean, why does he have to travel around and heal people? He could just like be like,
He could just send his lazy boy and be like, boom, healed, boom, healed. Susan over there in Kansas, boom, healed.
Yeah, and then you wouldn't have to like, you know, tout anything. He'd just be like healing people
for the hell of it.
Right.
Yeah. Or, you know, God could have not sent him in the first place and just changed everybody's hearts.
Sure.
I mean, if you want to go one further.
Yeah, he could have just said, hey, you know, no more sacrifices. I absolve you of your sins, you know.
Everybody's healed. The end. You know,
whatever.
Yeah. Nice.
Yeah.
So Jesus goes on to praise the centurion's faith, and he heals his servant from afar, sight unseen, never met the guy.
Sure.
Okay. Jesus was so impressed with the centurion because the centurion has faith in Jesus before even seeing any proof. He'd only heard stories.
Sure.
But he's like, sure, I'm going to go ahead and believe in you. I have faith.
I mean, let's assume that this centurion cared about his servant. right? Mm-hmm. Which I'm sure probably he did. If he's there asking for him to be healed.
And that was something else that I read, but I couldn't find a lot of notes on. But it is a big deal that he did not just send his servant away or have him killed. Okay. It was a big deal that he had him
So there housed. Was some sort of emotional attachment there, probably.
Maybe.
Right? So, but now I forget what I was going with that.
Let's say that that really happened.
Yeah. I don't recall what I was going to say now.
With the...
Sorry.
The centurion had faith before even seeing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, if he really cared for this person, the faith behind it would be, because he's heard stories of this guy healing people, mm-hmm. would be in the fact that he could heal people, not in, like, it's, to me, it's a big stretch for him to be like, I have faith this person can heal my servant, and I believe that he is the Son of God, and that he has godly powers from this Yahweh dude who I now believe in. Like, that's a big, like...
Those are so many...
leap to make.
Like, he has magic to heal. Maybe I can believe in that. But then on top of that, to be like, and he's the Messiah foretold in these Jewish testaments.
Right, you're talking about having the faith in the fact that he can heal and converting to Judaism... on the spot.
And that's two different things.
Because of hearing a fucking story from somebody about him healing somebody else.
Right. That's two different things. And so that kind of gets into this other question that I have where people ask, like, do you believe in God? Or are you saved? Or, like there's all these different questions. And I'm like, but what are you really asking? Are you asking, do I believe in an all-powerful being? Or are you asking, do I believe in an afterlife? Because those are not necessarily the same thing.
Right.
Or are you asking, am I a Christian who takes Christ as my savior? Which, again, is not necessarily all the same.
Right.
Do you believe in angels could even be taken as a separate question? Because there are people who 100% believe in angels, but who are also into crystals and numerology and would claim to be more Wiccan or naturalist than Christian.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I don't always know what question you're asking, and that kind of feels in the same realm as, why are we saying that dude went from, I believe you can heal, to... I believe you are the Jewish proclaimed Son of God who is here to save all of us.
Right.
That's two different questions.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, I believe in the Big Bang versus, like, God snapped his finger. Like, that's another question. You know what I mean? Like,
sure.
What are we talking about here? We're having several different conversations, and I just need it all spelled out for me.
Well, and that's one of the, like, when I'm online talking to Christians, mm-hmm. one of my first questions is, what kind of Christian are you? Like, are you a creationist? Are you Catholic? Are you, like, where are we going with this conversation?
Right.
You know, like, because it matters, right?
See, like, and I would just be like, but are you MAGA or not? And we can stop right there because I can't.
Well, yeah, but it does actually matter when you're having a conversation with someone who is Christian.
Yeah.
As to what version of Christianity they are proclaiming, mm-hmm. because there are different arguments they all make.
It totally reminds me, and I've said this before, it totally reminds me of the movie Civil War when Jesse Plemons has his red sunglasses and the people say, we're Americans, and Jesse Plemons, whatever the fuck his name is, he puts on his red sunglasses and he says, well, yeah. But what kind of Americans are you?
Right.
And I mean, that, like, matters, you know, in this movie, but also kind of in real life.
Yeah.
It fucking matters. What kind of American are you? Are you the kind that believes in the principles of what children are taught? Like, that we are this beautiful place of the American dream and equality for all? Or are you the guy who calls the cops on black people and you support ICE? Like, what kind of American are you?
Yeah.
Like, honestly, it matters. So, yeah, what kind of Christian are you? What kind of Jewish person are you? Like, all of these questions are tied up in this fucking guy.
Right.
So Jesus uses the centurion as an example of trust and recognition of his authority. And then he goes on to say that many outsiders will now enter God's kingdom, while some sons of the kingdom, so those who actually call themselves
Jewish
followers, will not. And that is a major theme in the entire book of Matthew, that outsiders are responding better than insiders.
Got it.
Which, that's so gatekeeper and Christian.
But it's almost like they're shaming people into, like, hey, these guys get it. Why aren't you getting it?
Mm-hmm. You know? I mean, even the fucking leper gets it.
Right.
What's wrong with you, fuckface?
But to me, this is... Okay, so, like, you have your... You've heard of tent revivals, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where they, like, they heal people in the fucking tent revivals and shit.
Oh, yeah.
Like, whatever. Like, not so much anymore. Maybe they still happen, but
snake
definitely older times, like they would heal people in the fucking crowd, right? And
I'm pretty sure they still have those.
Sure, I'm sure you're probably right. But the reason that a lot of this stuff is appealing to outsiders is because, sure, if you can heal me,
if you or can make someone me I walk love, again, yeah.
Fuck yeah, I'm following you.
Of course.
I mean, like, but you, I'm following you.
Right.
Right? Like, and if that means that I also have to follow Jesus and whatever, then sure, whatever.
I'm drinking your Kool-Aid, bro.
You're going to heal me, though, right? With your Jesus-y power there or whatever?
You, him, whatever we're calling it.
Yeah.
I'm being healed, though, right?
Right. Like, it has nothing to do with
that. I don't care where it comes from.
People don't fucking care as long as you can help them.
Right.
Right?
If you can help them. People want to be helped.
Right. And that's why if it was legitimate, like, if any of these things were legitimate,
mm-hmm.
I'd be right there with them.
Well, of course.
If you can heal anything you want, then
do fuck, it.
Who's got that power? Somebody got that power?
Yeah.
Let me know.
Let me know.
I've got a few ailments I need to take
you
care of.
You have neuropathy in your feet.
If you can take care of it, then I will follow you. How's that?
I mean, you know what? I have OCD, ADHD, and I'm autistic. If you can get rid of all three of those, like, boom, snap your finger, done, and I'm, like, all better now. Like, I'm not on the struggle bus, so to speak.
Right.
You know? Sure. I'm good. We're good. Okay? Yeah. Like, let's go. Anyways. So, moving on. Then we get to where Jesus heals Peter's wife's mother.
Peter's wife's mother.
Peter Piper.
Simon called Peter.
Yeah.
Okay.
And he also heals other people.
Right.
But right now we're talking about Peter's mother-in-law, okay?
Yeah.
And then he delivers from sickness and demonic possession a bunch of other people.
Yeah.
Okay? So I'm going to read verses 16 and 17.
Okay.
When evening came, many who were demon-possessed were brought to him, and he drove out the spirits with a word and healed all the sick. This was to fulfill what was spoken through the prophet Isaiah.
Mm.
He took up our infirmities and bore our diseases.
Okay.
Anyways...
So that lends me to believe that, like, he had no need to drive those demons into the pigs.
He didn't.
Because according to this statement, he takes it upon himself and then just, like, dissipates it through his godliness.
No, he drove out the spirit with a word and healed all the sick. He didn't take the spirits into him.
Right, but
the next line is that he fulfilled what was spoken through Isaiah. He took up our infirmities and bore our diseases. But he didn't take in the demons.
But that line, the prophecy, though, speaks to that he took up those things. That he took them upon himself, sort of.
The illnesses.
Well.
Our diseases and illnesses, not the demon possessed.
Whatever.
He did not take the demons
into
him.
But in one point,
he drove out the spirits.
Regardless. In one story, in the same book here,
he
drove them into a fucking pigs.
And he didn't have to do that.
And now he's not doing that at all.
Right. And there's no, like, I did as much research as I could find. I was like, where the demons go this time? There's no pigs mentioned. Where'd they go? There's no mention.
I think we should refer to Jesus as Jesus Pig Killer from here on out.
Jesus the Pig Killer.
Yeah.
Fucking pig killing.
That's right.
Fool.
Goddamn pig killer. Whatever.
You started to call him a pig fucker, funny.
Pig killer.
That reminds me of that first episode of Black Mirror. And
oh, Jesus Christ. don't even recount that. That's terrible.
We had a dear friend tell us that we should watch that show because it was so good, but they forgot that the first episode had like this whole
thing. Bad.
And we could not get past it. And I'm sure the show is excellent. We just could not get past that first episode. It was too disturbing.
It was very disturbing.
It was so disturbing. Yeah. So anyways, ancient people attributed many conditions to spirits or demons possession.
Of course they did, much like leprosy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Seizures, psychosis, muteness, self-harm, delirium, erratic behavior. And all of these things and more, we would today probably divide these into neurological disorders, psychiatric disorders, epilepsy, trauma, infection, disability. Sure. So there was a lot of ableism happening there.
Oh, absolutely.
Obviously.
Yeah.
Right. And we discussed this in the last chapter.
But that's one of those things where just science has taken over and
filled
all the gaps to let us know that these things are not magical and hooey bullshit.
The question is not like what demon and how can we get rid of it with which blessings. Now the question is, okay, so what are the symptoms and how can we treat them if they need to be treated, or how can we do workarounds? And psychiatry is still learning and progressing, but it's no longer a question of magic. It's just a question of how we proceed.
Yeah. I mean, if you're going to go that route, like, I mean, apparently Lexapro is basically Jesus.
Right? Yeah. I mean, no kidding. Like, praise Lexapro. It's not for everybody. Some people who have heart issues can't take it.
Sure.
Like,
no, but I'm just saying, like, the drug industry has done what Jesus did in the Bible, apparently.
No, it's so true.
And so apparently, you know, drugs and Jesus are...
I got blood of Jesus every night when I take my Lexapro. Woohoo! So from a modern perspective, many passages from this chapter in particular, but any passage where Jesus be healing the sick and the demon possessed, they absolutely read as pre-scientific interpretations of illness and disability.
Yeah.
Debilicity. Yeah.
Yeah.
AKA ableism.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
But there's another layer here too. In Second Temple Judaism, demons also symbolized chaos, oppression, spiritual corruption, and forces hostile to God. So it was very layered. It wasn't just like, you have this disease, you're gross. It was, and there's all these reasons why God is involved, and all these reasons why demons are haunting us. And like, they just had...
It's kind of like witches in Salem.
No, totally. They had these whole stories built around it.
Sure, absolutely.
Also, it's important, though, to add that exorcisms were not unique to Jesus and his time period.
Okay.
They existed widely in the ancient Mediterranean world, and I would love to do a deep dive on that.
Right, but I don't think they had existed in the ancient Judaism world. Not so much in the Old Testament. They might have, like, when they went to Babylon and they had the, what was it,
Zoroastrianism?
Zoroastrianism.
Yeah.
They, maybe that's where, the, like, that would have been more Mediterranean. Like, not that they're not Mediterranean, but, like, I feel like they picked that up from other cultures.
Probably. There was a lot of stuff happening.
Sure.
It wasn't just Jesus is the thing that we're saying.
Right. Yeah.
There was a lot of stuff going on at that time.
Yeah.
And exorcism was happening all over the fucking place.
I just feel like we would have heard about exorcisms and demons in the Old Testament at some point.
Right.
If they thought they existed back then.
No, it was just like this time period between the Old and the New Testament was rampant.
With demons?
With fear and expectation that a Messiah was coming soon.
Yeah.
And a lot of different cultures had this idea.
Sure.
And so the whole evil magic thing was not just restricted to Judaism.
Well, it's an easy way to dismiss people you don't want to deal with, right?
I mean, that's what the witch trials were all about.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, okay. So, but let's go back a minute to the whole what was spoken through the prophet Isaiah.
Yeah.
because, like, I always have to go back and be like, where'd you get that from?
Right.
Okay. So what they're quoting there is from Isaiah chapters 52 and 53, the end of 52 into the beginning of 53. Okay.
Okay.
So starting at 52 verse 13 through 53 verse 9.
Okay.
See, my servant will act wisely or will prosper, depending on your translation. Mm-hmm. He will be raised and lifted up and highly exalted. Just as there were many who were appalled at him, his appearance was so disfigured beyond that of any human being.
See?
And his form marred beyond human likeness. So he will sprinkle many nations, and kings will shut their mouths because of him. For what they were not told, they will see. And what they have not heard, they will understand.
Mm-hmm.
Who has believed our message, and to whom has the arm of the Lord been revealed? He grew up before him like a tender shoot and like a root out of dry ground. He had no beauty or majesty to attract us to him, nothing in his appearance that we should desire him. He was despised and rejected by mankind, a man of suffering and familiar with pain. Like one from whom people hide their faces, he was despised, and we held him in low esteem. Surely he took up our pain and bore our suffering, yet we considered him punished by God, stricken by him, and afflicted. But he was pierced for our transgressions.
We commented on that.
We did.
Yeah.
He was crushed for our iniquities. The punishment that brought us peace was on him. And by his wounds, we are healed. We all, like sheep, have gone astray. Each of us has turned to our own way. And the Lord has laid on him the iniquity of us all. He was oppressed and afflicted, yet he did not open his mouth. He was led like a lamb to the slaughter, and as a sheep before its shearers is silent, so he did not open his mouth. By oppression, or from arrest and judgment, he was taken away. Yet who of his generation protested? For he was cut off from the land of the living. For the transgression of my people he was punished. He was assigned a grave with the wicked, and with the rich in his death, though he had done no violence, nor was any deceit in his mouth.
So there's so much wrong with mm-hmm. the description of Jesus there.
Well, that's not a description of Jesus.
No, yeah. I'm saying that if we take that as a description of Jesus.
Right.
There is so much wrong with how that image is depicted now.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And really, they don't say anything in the New Testament here, in Matthew at least, with regard to him being ugly and detestable or anything like that.
Right.
Right?
Right.
So they're skipping a whole major point of that whole proclamation that was made.
A lot of people only take, like, when they say, okay, so, like, the original thing was, let me go back a page here. What was spoken through the prophet Isaiah is the original where we started.
Sure,
right?
Sure.
Where we started, where we are.
Yeah.
A lot of people will only take a couple of the verses, but that's why I went longer and went out before and after to make sure I got the whole thing of what dude was saying.
Yeah.
Okay. Not just a few of the verses. I wanted the whole thing. Because here's the thing. In its original context, Isaiah's quote-unquote suffering servant is widely understood by Jewish interpreters as Israel collectively, or a faithful remnant within Israel.
Sure.
And again, that remnant, we're always talking about the remnant.
Yeah.
Not a future Messiah.
In Judaism, we are.
Yes.
And in Christianity, they're obviously talking about Jesus.
Well, it doesn't matter what they're talking about. They can say, no, he was talking about this, but the Jews wrote the fucking book.
Well,
they will tell you what he was talking about.
Sure. But again, even with, so the Old Testament had so many inconsistencies, so many contradictions, mm-hmm. right? I mean, that was a whole
portion
of what we did, right?
Yeah.
And so, and it's still true. It's becoming more and more like this is going to be harrowing.
Ridiculous.
How many fucking contradictions we're going to have to cover in this.
I mean,
like, this is ridiculous. Yeah, it's ridiculous.
It's absurd.
Yeah. They've been cherry picking from mm-hmm. before Jesus.
Yeah.
And they're still cherry picking worse now that they have a Jesus.
Yeah.
They're just like, and we're going to take that bit and that bit and that bit.
Totally.
And it's so bad. And then not only that, but you take Christians today and they take this whole thing that was cherry picked back then and they cherry pick it more.
Yeah.
Like
they cherry pick from the cherry pickings.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
Like, I don't even know what, you know,
what is even left?
Do we even have cherries anymore?
Like, look, look, I'm not saying that the Jews got it right. Okay.
Well, no, they didn't.
But I mean, obviously they didn't, but I think I'm going to go with their interpretation. If I'm going to go with any religious interpretation, sure. I'm going to go with their interpretation of the Hebrew Bible, of the Old Testament, before I'm going to take what the Christians say it says.
Well, now, but just to be fair, this group of people is a denomination sect group of Jewish people at the time.
At the time, but they're rewriting and pulling from and backstuffing.
But even in the Old Testament, things changed from back in Moses' time to when we got, like, there's a lot of upheaval in Judaism.
No, I totally get what you're saying, but like, and then it stopped. There was a stopping point. And then the book ended, the end. You know what I mean? Like, it did the minor prophets and then the end. There was no more. So we're done. So the Hebrew Bible, that's what we have. That's what we got. And we can talk about that. Anything that comes after that, I'm like, you're just a different sect of Judaism, and you're misinterpreting things that were already questionable at best. So you don't even count a bit. That's my take on Christianity at this point.
Right. But there is some call, like, I'm not saying that specifically there, but there is some thoughts even in Judaism still that there is a coming Messiah. Like that is still a possibility that Judaism leaves
but
open.
They're not like trying to start wars in countries and stuff to make it happen, are they?
I
don't know. America's real super fucking excited about it.
That would be.
I guess that's the whole America on Team Israel. So I
was going to say you might want to like eat your words there.
I guess the Israeli Jews are.
And there was the whole Palestinian, you know, issue, and I mean, Israel's kind of a warmonger right now. So I would maybe like, you know, walk that one back a little bit.
Well, okay, the Israeli Jews are very excited to bring about the end of the world.
Sure, and yeah. Whatever it is they're doing.
Yeah. Let's not, though.
Right.
I don't know. Religion is stupid.
Yes.
I mean, I think we can all agree on that.
Yes.
All right. Anyways, Christians later reinterpreted these stupid passages messianically.
Yeah.
And applied them to Jesus.
Right.
I mean, that's just a thing. It happened. Right. That's a fact.
Yeah.
This is one of the major Jewish-Christian interpretive splits. Duh.
Right. Yeah.
Modern scholars generally agree that Matthew is rereading Isaiah through a very Christian lens.
Oh, yeah.
Not simply reproducing Isaiah's original historical meaning.
Well, because they
leave out
generally
bits.
When they reference it, they leave out the big parts that are different from what they want.
And that's why I try to gather verses on either end.
Right.
Yeah. Like, they're quoting verse 6. And I'm like, okay, let's read verses 1 through 20 just to make sure that 6 is in context.
Not that this would ever convince anybody who is vehemently Christian, right? But if you are thinking about, if you're deconstructing, if you're thinking about your religion and going, should I believe that? Then maybe you ought to like go back and examine the full context of these things in the Old Testament that you were taught about early on.
Listen,
because that's where these problems really start kind of creeping in.
If you are deconstructing, you could ditch the New Testament and just go read the Old Testament and,
and listen. Done deal.
Yeah. Listen to our podcast of the Hebrew Bible, which is the Old Testament, and you know, see if you can answer our questions. See if the questions that we have match your own.
Right.
And you don't have to worry about the New Testament. Just read the Old Testament.
Right.
And that's what your religion is based on. If you're deconstructing, I feel like the Old Testament is super fucking important. If you're talking about prophecies fulfilled, read the fucking prophecies.
Right. And if you get out of the Old Testament and you don't think God's a dick, then I guess I can't
help you. Then you were always going to think that, and that's fine.
Right, yeah.
Whatever.
Right.
This kind of reinterpretation was common in ancient Judaism. Mm-hmm. Early Christians constantly searched the Hebrew scriptures for passages that they believed foreshadowed Jesus.
Sure.
So
they want something. They're trying to find. Yeah. They're trying to find it.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's kind of like if you're doing a book report, right? And you have a theory about a character, then you're going to go through the book looking for quotes from the book that support your hypothesis about that character.
Yeah.
So I'm not necessarily saying that, like, they were doing it wrong, but they were wrong for doing it.
You're already talking about a mythical being.
Mm-hmm.
That's true. How wrong can you be?
Right.
You start out at wrong and you ended up at wrong. So you didn't really go that far.
No, you're right. You're right. moving on, because I just can't. Like, this shit pisses me off so bad. So then we get Jesus. He departs. He's like, I'm out. And two persons offer to be his disciples, and then he teaches them.
Okay.
Yeah. He speaks to an overenthusiastic follower about the need to appreciate the cost in following Jesus. And we didn't get any of this. Like, I don't know if you can even recall what these verses were.
Okay.
It's verse 20. Jesus replied, "Foxes have dens or holes, depending on your interpretation.
Yeah.
And birds have nests, but the Son of Man has no place to lie his head."
I do remember that, yeah.
Yeah, and we were like, I don't know what the fuck you're talking about with foxes and birds and dens and holes, and atheists and foxholes, what? Foxes have dens and birds have nests, right?
Yeah.
What he's saying is that discipleship is unfucking comfortable, and following Jesus means instability and sacrifice.
Okay.
You're not gonna have a good place to lay your head if you follow me.
Sure.
So just be wise in, you know, just know that ahead of time.
Yeah.
Like, it's gonna suck. The rewards in the afterlife will be great, but you're gonna get stoned to death. Are you good with that? Like, sure, okay. And then there was, like, that whole Son of Man thing.
Yeah.
And he uses that again in the next chapter.
Yeah.
That we'll see again when we get to that Q&A.
Right.
Depending on where it's used, like, there's questions. Like, in this chapter, it's usually interpreted by Christians as a Hebrew phrase expressive of humiliation and debasement.
Okay.
But Jesus uses it constantly. And so scholars still debate exactly what is meant by it, because in some places it means a humble human. In other places, it means apocalyptic judge, messianic title, and an indirect self-reference.
Okay.
So, like, it's one of those Son of Man. What does that mean?
Right.
Is the final answer.
Sure. Okay.
I mean, we got that a lot in the Old Testament, too.
Right.
It's one of the most argued over phrases in New Testament scholarship.
Hmm.
Son of Man. What is interesting is that Son of Adam and Daughter of Eve are phrases that are used by C.S. Lewis in...
I thought we had learned...
The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe.
Right. The Narnia.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I thought we had learned at one point in the Old Testament that Son of Man was basically Adam. Like, Adam, like...
You said that the last time this came up,
yeah,
and
no,
you
I
were
know.
Wrong.
Okay, all right.
We determined that you were wrong.
Got it.
Yeah.
I don't know why I thought that then.
Son of Man, that doesn't even make sense. Son of himself?
Well, that's
How
true.
Can Adam be the son of himself? Man. You're confusing Son of Man with Son of Adam, which is C.S. Lewis.
Got it.
Okay. So, yeah. And that's fine.
All right.
That's fine. Okay, so moving on. We get verses 21 and 22. Another disciple said to him, "Lord, first let me go and bury my father." But Jesus told him, "Follow me and let the dead bury their own dead."
Right.
And that we were like, rude.
Kind of callous.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This line shocks people because burial obligations were super sacred in Judaism.
Sure. I mean, they are still, really. I mean, like, did you really go skip a funeral for something for your, was it his father?
Yeah.
You wouldn't skip your father's funeral to go follow some dude?
No. But there's three different things, three different maybe interpretations.
Okay.
Okay? Jesus may have been using hyperbole to state that the kingdom movement takes priority over everything else.
Sure.
And that all the common offices of life may be performed by any person, but to preach the tidings of the kingdom of God is only granted to a few. And to these only by a very special call. So these few should therefore immediately abandon worldly concerns and employments and give themselves wholly up to the work of ministry.
Oh, they are
immediately.
Your lives are over.
You're done.
You're all.
You're God's child now. You all
work for me now.
Yeah.
Period. Yeah.
No joy for you. Nothing. Not even your dad's funeral.
Right. That's
Fuck off with that. That's needy bullshit that I don't have time for. You will pee in a Mountain Dew bottle and get those packages delivered. Right?
Right.
Okay. So there's that. Next, others interpret it to differentiate the spiritually dead from the physically dead. It was usual for Jews to consider a man as quote unquote dead who had departed from the precepts of the capital L law.
Okay.
And on this ground, every transgressor was reputed to be a dead man, like dead man walking kind of thing.
Got it.
Like, they're spiritually dead, so fuck them.
Got it.
You can't save them. You know, fuck them.
All right.
Natural death is the separation of the body and the soul. Spiritual death is the separation of God and the soul. So they considered men who live in sin to be dead to God.
Mm.
He was basically saying, leave the spiritually dead to bury their natural dead.
I see.
Yeah. So that's the second interpretation. Okay. Which that kind of makes sense. I can see what they're saying there, even though I completely 110% think that that's bullshit.
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
There's a third interpretation that suggests delayed commitment. The man may not literally have had a dead father yet. He may have meant, let me stay home until my father eventually dies. My dad's an old man.
Yeah.
I'll come with you when I'm done caring for my father and have him dead, you know, and then buried.
Right.
In that case, Jesus is rejecting indefinite postponement.
Got it.
So, and that one I can kind of see too.
What I'm hearing a lot here is that nobody really knows what the fuck's going on exactly.
No, but one thing out of these three, regardless of what is meant, the passage emphasizes 100% radical commitment.
Sure.
And that's bullshit.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm not here for it.
Right.
Like, no, that's a cult and I am out.
Right.
Like, I'm not doing that. That sounds dumb.
Right.
I don't know. Whatever.
Yeah.
I can't with this. Okay, then we move on to verses 23 through 26. Then he got into the boat, and his disciples followed him. You remember this?
I remember this.
Fucking storm. Yeah. Suddenly a furious storm came up on the lake,
right. So
that the waves swept over the boat. But Jesus was sleeping.
Right.
The disciples went and woke him, saying, Lord, Lord, save us. We're going to drown. He replied, you of little faith. Why are you so afraid, bros? Then he got up and rebuked the wind and the waves.
Yeah.
Fuck you, wind. Remember?
Yeah.
And it was completely calm.
Right. Yeah.
Okay. And we were like, can a lake really?
Well, but then, we had people reach out to us and be like, yeah, actually. It
actually.
Can.
Yeah. So. And I wanted to give you room to say that because then I also found how stormy can a lake actually get?
Right.
Quite stormy, actually.
Yeah.
My bad.
Right.
I apologize. I did not know. Also, above and beyond that, the Sea of Galilee is below sea level, surrounded by hills, and vulnerable to sudden violent windstorms.
Mm.
Cold air rushing through valleys can create dangerous conditions quickly.
Hmm.
Fishermen still experience this there to this day.
Wow.
I had no idea. Again, I apologize. I was wrong.
Yeah.
Okay. Mark it in the book.
Yeah.
Because Fern says I don't own when I'm wrong, and I would like Fern to know that I said I was wrong, and I apologize.
Okay.
Jesus was the one who suggested that the group sail across the lake, right? He's like, let's go, guys.
Right.
And the lake was apparently well known for its fierce storms blowing up quickly out of nowhere. So that's why the disciples were like, fuck! Why'd you make us get in this fucking boat? You knew it that there could be a storm. I mean, you're all knowing. What the... Why?
Sure.
Wakey, wakey, bitch.
Right.
Like, you made us get in this fucking boat that you knew there could be a storm.
Right.
God, why are you letting this happen? Right? So that's why they're expressing disappointment with Jesus when he did nothing to help, but was instead snorting it up in the back of the boat. Right? So they're like, the fuck, dude? Okay.
Snoring it up?
Snoring it up.
I thought you said snorting it up. I'm like,
snoring.
Is he doing coke back there? What
no,
is he doing?
No, he was snoring it up.
Okay, all right.
He was sleeping hard. He was cutting Z's.
Sure.
He was probably tired from cutting all that work.
Yeah.
It was an indication, likely, of the tiredness from his constant miracle healing, you know?
Obviously.
But I'm tired. I said, I'm tired. So that's why they were pissy.
Okay.
Because it's not like they were like, let's get on a boat. Whee! They were like, this boat? This lake?
Right.
Really? And Jesus is like, come on.
Okay. And then he went to sleep.
Right. And then the storm came and they were like, fuck me. Are you serious? And then they were like, on top of that, fuck me. Are you serious? And then they see him sleeping and they're like, really, Jesus?
Right.
And Jesus is like, I thought you had faith, bitches. And they're like, well, I like did until like the boat about capsized.
Right.
And again, you didn't tell us. Like, to this point, we've only seen magic powers that are, like, making people be healed.
Yeah, we didn't know you could control the weather.
Right.
So that's yeah. new. That's new.
And that's a big deal, right. is why I was saying that.
Yeah.
Because here's the thing. Jesus displays his authority over creation. That's what this story's actually about.
Okay.
The story is symbolic, not just meteorological.
Sure.
Ancient Mediterranean cultures often associated large bodies of water with chaos, danger, death, and cosmic disorder.
Okay.
In the Hebrew Bible, God repeatedly demonstrates power by controlling waters.
Yeah, that's true.
Right?
Yeah.
So when Jesus calms the storm, the ancient audience hears more than just he stopped the bad weather. They hear he's doing something only God can do.
Got it.
This is a big fucking deal.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? Which I didn't get all that. I was like, why are they mad? Why is he sleeping? What's sure. going on?
No, it was a means to an end for the story.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. It was they made a reason for this to happen.
Yeah.
Like right. the plot sure. needed it right. to be. Yeah.
Plus Jesus wasn't worried. He could walk on the water apparently.
Right? We're not there yet.
I know, but I hear
he can walk on water. It's a phrase anyway.
Yeah.
I mean, I haven't seen it yet. I don't know. So then we get to where Jesus meets two demon-possessed men, and he cures them. And then the demons enter into the herd of swine, which, rushing into the sea, perish.
Ah, yes.
That's Here we the, go. That's the, yeah. The,
okay.
Yeah. The swine herds announce the miracle to the Gerasenes city sure. that we can't say,
yeah.
who then request Christ to depart from their country a fucking sap.
Right.
Okay? He's like, they're like, get out. Okay, so this is verses 30 through 32. Some distance from them, a large herd of pigs was feeding. The demons begged Jesus, if you drive us out, send us into the herd of pigs. He said to them, go. So they came out and went into the pigs, and the whole herd rushed down the steep bank into the lake and died in the water. What the fuck? And we were like, I'm sorry, what just happened just now?
Yeah, well, I didn't realize that they asked to be.
Mm-hmm.
The demons asked him to.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
That's weird.
Yeah.
Okay.
They were like, if you're going to send us out, put us in the herd of pigs.
Okay.
Which is really weird.
And then they ran down and
drowned.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So at first, the pigs would strongly suggest that this was Gentile or mixed territory because Jews generally did not eat pork. We had right. questions yeah. about this, right? Yeah. Because of dietary laws that were given in Leviticus and Deuteronomy.
Sure.
But the region of this city, Gadarenes or Gerasenes, it depends on what translation you're reading.
Okay.
There's like six different ways that this city could be spelled.
Oh, that's yeah. fun.
Right?
Yeah.
So it was part of the Decapolis area. Remember, we talked about the Decapolis was a city composed of 10 smaller regions, and none of them had their own little name, so they just called it the Decapolis.
Yeah, I kind of vaguely remember that.
Yeah. So that the Decapolis was heavily influenced by Greek and Roman culture and contained many Gentiles.
Okay.
So that's very likely what that area was.
Okay.
Okay. So the fact that pig farming occurred there is actually not surprising. Got it was surprising to us because we're like, whoa?
Yeah, because we didn't know where they were exactly.
Yeah, exactly. So it's not a surprise, though, that these folks were pig farming.
Got it.
Okay.
Okay.
Pigs may have been used for food, trade, Roman military supply, or economic livelihood.
Okay.
These were in all probability Jewish property, though, and thus kept and used in express violation of the law of God, and therefore their destruction was a proper manifestation of the justice of God.
Hmm.
So a lot of notes went back and forth on that. Like, a lot of like Christian scholars would be like, yes, those Jews were bad. They were Jews and they were doing wrong. But then other scholars that are not Christian would be like, maybe it was Jewish, but probably more like Gentiles because right, it was Roman say, area.
If this was a Roman and Greek area, then maybe not. Then
right. True. So it just depends on which scholar you go with. I'm going to lean towards, I bet it was Gentiles.
Well, but it does matter, though, with regard to what happened,
yeah.
right?
I mean,
and to me, it feels more like Gentiles because no one liked, they wanted them out. They're like, get the fuck out.
Yeah, exactly. So the question was, why send the demons into the pigs?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So here's the thing. For one thing, I'm going to tell you this first, and then I'll tell you something else. Pigs symbolized uncleanness to Jews, so there's obviously that symbolic resonance, which I think sure. I even said at the time. They're uncloven.
Right.
Or yeah. they're... No, they are cloven animals, and right. that makes them unclean, and that's sure. why. Blah, blah, blah. Unclean spirits entering unclean animals, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
Also, demons going into animals visibly proves that they left, and the destructive stampede dramatizes the danger of the demons. Mm. Right?
Okay.
Okay, here's another thing, though. A lot of Christian apologists will say that a lot of times when the unclean make a request, God will grant it if it goes ahead and harms them.
Ah.
To prove the point.
So that's why they ran into the...
Yeah.
Whatever.
He's like, yeah, go ahead.
Okay.
Go ahead. You're in the pigs now. And then the pigs immediately run into the water and drown. Right? Okay. Some scholars also note a possible anti-Roman symbolism here. Roman legions sometimes used boar imagery. Additionally, the word legion is a Roman military term used in the parallel account, I think, in Mark.
Okay.
So.
That sounds, to me, more likely.
Yeah.
But, you know, whatever. That would make more sense to me.
I'm going
to
go with it was Gentile and it was anti-Roman symbolism.
Right, right.
Both.
Yeah.
That makes sense,
yeah.
right? So then the people asked Jesus to get the fuck out. And we were like, why? Why weren't they happy? I mean, let's, you know, keep in mind that he had just, like, helped two people not be
demons
anymore, right? Yeah. right? And yeah. they were violent.
Yeah.
And, yeah, they killed the pigs, but still. So we were like, why were the townspeople upset? Shouldn't they be happy that dangerous men were healed?
Right.
The fuck?
Yeah.
Right? But from the townspeople's perspective, especially if they were Gentiles, this strange holy man arrives and he's like raving lunatic to them, like yeah. just spouting off shit that they don't know anything about.
Sure.
Supernatural chaos erupts. For good or for worse, doesn't matter. It's weird.
Right.
We don't like magical weirdness.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
A huge herd just up and dies.
Right.
And someone has lost substantial wealth, which we mentioned at the time. No wonder the pig herders ran into town and were like, Jesus fucking Christ! We just lost our whole fucking head!
Right.
I don't know why I gave them British accents, but
sure.
that's what happened.
Yeah.
Okay? So this story reflects a recurring gospel theme. People react to divine power with fear rather than gratitude. That's the point that Matthew was trying to make. But I'm like, yeah, but you were like in land that wasn't welcoming your story.
Yeah.
So like that's like, on you.
I don't see so much fear as anger.
Yeah.
Like this dude just fucking killed a whole herd of pigs. Get the fuck out of here.
Yeah, it didn't say like, they were scared. You're lucky
we don't fucking kill you.
Like, it didn't say they were scared. It said, you can leave now.
Right.
Yeah, it just told them to get out.
Right.
Like, it didn't say they were scared. It just said, get out.
Yeah.
And Jesus was like,
bing. I don't even hardly blame them. Like,
no.
You just killed off a whole herd of fucking pigs.
Yeah. And
that's not cool, man.
Right. And for all we know, the two quote-unquote demon-possessed guys that were violent, maybe they were protecting the road.
Right.
Like, maybe they were, you know...
They were keeping them from going into the fucking lake or whatever.
Right? Who knows?
I don't know.
So, another note about demons, though. Demons usually seem to recognize Jesus faster than the humans do. Because the demons, like, recognized him immediately and were like, Son of David, dude!
Right.
Like, if you're going to do something with us, send us into the pigs, man. Right? This happens constantly in the Gospels. We're going to see that there's going to be more demons, apparently.
Okay.
And they will always immediately recognize him as magical, super son of God man.
I guess magical people will recognize other magical people.
Like to, you know? Like meets like.
Right.
You know? Yeah. So, ironically, his own disciples will repeatedly misunderstand him. The crowds almost always misunderstand him.
Okay.
Yet the demons 100% instantly know who he is and recognize his power and abilities. Hmm. That's another point that Matthew's trying to make here.
Okay.
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 And it's going to be a repetitive literary motif throughout this whole book. We're going to see the demons always get it.
To show that he's supernatural or whatever yes. the fuck
yes.
is going on.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah. The people that are either godly and good or the people who are anti-godly bad.
Right.
Will always recognize Jesus.
Because they need to show the undercurrent of all this God shit.
Yes.
So like, look, it's there. Mm-hmm. Can't you see it?
Right.
They see it. It's happening.
It's just interesting that normal folk
can't see it.
Don't get it.
Right.
They're too normies.
Yeah. Yeah.
Don't be a normie.
You just gotta believe us.
Yeah. Just you know? Be special.
Right.
Okay. Anyways, so chapter 8 quietly contains an anti-status message. The people who receive praise are not priests, not scholars, and not rulers. Instead, it's sick people, servants, disgusting women. Ew, women are gross. Foreigners, social outcasts.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah.
This pattern shows up repeatedly in the Gospels, so we're going to see much more of this, and it's going to make me barf.
Yeah.
And it likely contributed to Christianity's appeal among lower status populations.
Sure, because you always hear how Jesus helped the sick and the poor.
The meek will inherit the earth.
Right, yeah.
Right? Yeah.
That's the part you always hear.
Yeah.
Right?
Of course. So another interesting thing that jumps out in Matthew chapter 8 is that nobody reacts to miracles the way a modern day apologist often imagines that they would. People don't say, a miracle happened. Christianity must be true. It's beautiful. Look at the magic that's happening. Christ is here. Yay.
Right.
Like, Christians think that that's the way people were just walking around going, Christ is here. Let's celebrate. Whee! But instead, regular people were not doing that. They were reacting with fear, confusion, skepticism, requests for secrecy, and demands that Jesus get the fuck out of town.
Right.
Which that's how the majority of people were acting.
Question a lot of this.
Right. Personally. Exactly.
Because again, if you can prove that you're doing this shit, sign me up.
Yeah.
You know, like.
But even what's I just like when I read that note, I was like, huh. Because even within the narrative itself, miracles rarely produce universal belief. Let me read that again. Even within the narrative itself, miracles rarely produce universal relief.
Sure.
And that's just kind of cool, actually.
Right.
Like, it doesn't... These stories, even in the stories, they're not inspiring crowds to believe.
Right.
Like, your own story is stupid.
Yeah.
Your own story is calling itself stupid.
Yes.
That's kind of nuanced in a way. I'm not sure if it's brilliant or just absolutely the worst.
Right. You kind of said it at the beginning, but I feel like this is just it. They're just trying to prove that Jesus is Jesus.
Mm-hmm. And they're trying
really so fucking hard. Yeah.
It's gross.
It really, really bothers me.
It's annoying. It's tiresome. It's causing extra work because I have to keep on, okay, you're quoting the Old Testament. Now I have to go find out, what are you quoting exactly? Okay, you think you're quoting this one or two verses, but let me actually grab the whole thing to see what actually was said and what did that mean? Like, the stupidity is causing me extra work, and I really resent it.
I think the part that really bothers me is that it's so obvious that they're trying really hard
mm-hmm.
to make a point that this guy is the son of God, right?
Uh-huh.
To the to the point of absurdity.
Yes.
Right? And yet Christians don't see this.
Right.
They don't see
even smart Christians.
They don't see that this is just absurd prophecy stuffing and absurd
nonsense
stories that obviously didn't happen the way they say they happened.
Right?
You know, like, it's just, none of this makes sense.
It doesn't make sense.
And it doesn't really track with, like, legitimate story. Nothing here rings true.
Yeah. It just doesn't
ring true to me.
It's so obviously fake and silly.
Yeah.
And because the people were simple, they didn't have to try. Like, we have Netflix now. You got to try a lot harder to fool people these days. You know, people buy AI because it's so much more progressed.
I don't feel like you're going to try that hard.
I don't know. I don't know.
Anyway, that was our Q&A for today?
That was our Q&A for today over chapter 8
of
Little Maddie.
Right. I think we're going to try to come back tomorrow, hopefully, with
chapters 9 and 10 of Little Maddie.
Q&A. Yes.
So that'll be a Q&A part 2 on Sunday.
Right. All right. That being said, we will see you guys then.
Yep. Bye. Bye.
Hey, wife, I guess that's the end.
But husband, that's just sad.
It doesn't have to be. We are on lots of social media platforms like Twitter. Our handle there is sacrilegious_D.
For D's nuts.
Oh my God. Stop doing that. Anyway, we're also on Facebook, Instagram, and Pinterest. There's a link to all of our social media sites at our website.
Ooh, we have a website?
Yeah, it's sacrilegiousdiscourse.com, where you can also find a link to our merch shop.
We have a merch shop?
Yep. We have podcast-themed clothing, mugs, notebooks, and more, as well as an atheist and science-themed products.
Wow, our fans should really go check that out right now.
Definitely. They can get in touch with us by sending an email to sacrilegiousdiscourse@gmail.com. But before they do that, we could really use some help.
Oh yeah? With what?
Well, it's not free running the podcast, and we need some financial support in order to get better equipment, which will free up time so we can concentrate on our podcast and our fans.
Okay, so what should they do?
Head over to patreon.com/sacrilegiousdiscourse and sign up as a contributor on our podcast. Supporters there receive additional bi-weekly episodes that we record just for our Patreon members for as little as $2 a month.
Also, we'd really appreciate it if you would like and subscribe on whatever platform you're using.
And Apple Podcast reviews help us out tremendously.
Like and subscribe. Leave an Apple review. Join us on Twitter. Support us on Patreon. That's a lot of instructions. Don't forget to say thanks.
Thanks.
Okay, bye.